2001 Salt Lake Suns Game Symposium Session 316, Fighting Homophobia, Two Parents Can Make a Difference. Participants Robert Stephenson, Kay Stephenson, Ted Packer, and Clay Packard.
Well, I must say I'm amazed to see so many of you here this morning. A friend of mine said yesterday, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it to your session tomorrow morning. And I said, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it. We've come to Sunstone every day, and this is the first early session we've gotten to. But it just takes us so long to get out of the house. We have to take a fistful of pills. And they have all these directions on them, you know. Take this pill 30 minutes before you take any other pill, and don't lie down. And then I have one pill that says, take this whenever you feel you can afford it. And so it's just a nightmare. And so we're amazed that we're here. And I told myself, well, you know, the old Mormon scripture, wherever two or three are gathered together, it counts as a meeting, right? And the earlier in the morning it is, the higher it is on the holiness code, right, that we've been hearing about. Well, Rob and I, this is a banner year for us this summer because we have had these important birthdays. Rob is 75 and I'm 70. And, you know, when you, let's hear it. The secret is to keep breathing in and breathing out.
That's the secret.
And, you know, we're trying to be philosophical about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we know that we can't be perennial young like Peter Pan. But believe me, it's a bit of a shock when your pan begins petering out. And they say the very young look to the future, the very old look to the past. And if you notice, Rob and I, we look worried. Because it's just, you know, it's kind of amazing. We've met quite a few friends who knew us in college and in our former existence. And Rob and I met at the university over 50 years ago. And those were the glory years for me. I peaked as a college girl. I knew exactly how to be a college girl. And it was a time of selfish self-absorption, you know, unfettered with responsibility. It was perfect. But I was one of those single girls with one single thought, staying that way. And I intended to play the field and never field the play. But when you start playing around with fire, a girl usually ends up cooking over it. And before I knew what had happened, I had traded courtship, which is oceans of emotions, for marriage, which is expanses of expenses. And I had a four-bedlam house filled with children playing hide-and-go-shriek. And
I hadn't heard that one.
And one thing I can say about motherhood, it gave me an even disposition. I was mad all the time. And I was so tired. Anyone who says they sleep like a baby doesn't have one. Believe me. Well, we had these five children. Their pictures are not here. And they were alike in many disrespects. Three of them went to law school, and that's where they became really big on freedom of speech. They always called home collect. But I don't want to give you the wrong impression about how I feel about motherhood. I can honestly say I didn't know what true happiness was until I became a mother. Of course, then it was too late. Oh, dear. But the thing that kept us going all those years was this idea that there was a light at the end of the tunnel, you know, the empty nest syndrome. But we sent four of them on foreign missions, and they came home again. We sent them away to graduate school. They came home again. We thought, what are we doing wrong? I read them the story of the three little pigs, and they would say, what is she talking about? Finally, I said, you know, you've got to start shifting for yourself. They thought we were buying them a sports car. Well, finally, it happened. You know, all things come to those who wait. And our youngest son went away to school in California. And there we were, alone in that quiet house. And as we realized we were all alone and looked on all those empty beds,
I have to tell you, we had a strange new emotion right here. Ecstasy. But now the time had come when we could sit back on our laurels, and we were hit with the biggest challenge we've ever had. And that was when our youngest son told us he had to accept the fact that he was gay and get on with his life and be an authentic person and stop trying to be something he wasn't. Now, we had suspected this for years because Eric was different from our other boys from a very early age. But, you know, we couldn't, it just wasn't in our vocabulary. I mean, we didn't know anybody who was homosexual. We didn't talk about it. And it certainly couldn't happen to us because we had the perfect family. I mean, people would say to me, well, there's the mother of the perfect family. And it made me uneasy, but really we did fit the mold, you know. We looked to be a perfect family. And
we were a perfect family.
Yeah, we were. We are.
We had people tell us that in church.
we
wish our family was like your family.
They didn't know. But he told us that he had to stop trying to be something he wasn't. And so he then went on with his life. He was out of the closet, and we went into the closet. And we were there for several years, just in a state of denial, isolation, fear, grief. It was not a pretty time in our lives, and we're not really proud of it. Unfortunately, a lot of parents stay there forever. They never talk about it. And so it's been quite an amazing journey for those who know us when we were just inching our way out to where we are now are kind of amazed. In fact, Wayne Scouse said to me yesterday, when I think of where Rob used to be and where he is now, and in fact, as we were talking about what we were going to say today, I kept saying to Rob, you can't say that, Rob. And he said, yes, I can, you know, and all this stuff. And I remember when Jamie Henderson, who's the son of Mitzi Henderson, who was the president of the National PFLAG when we first joined, said that her mother at first would not talk. And then she began talking. And now she's talking to Oprah. And so that's kind of the way it is. But it's been a journey for us. And those years were hard because Rob and I did not respond the same way. I was filled with love and compassion. You know, I was over there on the politics of compassion scale that Eloise talked about the other day. And Rob was over on the purity code. And we were having problems with each other. We got to the point where we couldn't talk about it because I said, I just can't believe these terrible things you're saying. And Eric was saying, the only reason I ever come home, Mom, is because of you. And, you know, this perfect family was crumbling. I think people don't realize when they talk about family values, we're a family. And it was very hard for us. So I have brought as my visual aid a reformed homophobe. Here he is, in living color.
Well, this morning we're talking about how we deal with homophobia. And I was one. I'm not one now. I'm a reformed homophobe. And I'm proud to be a reformed homophobe.
Ted says the psychological word is recovered.
Well, we discussed that, didn't we? We tried to figure out what word I should use in that regard. Recovered? Sounds like it was an alcoholic.
Worse.
Kind of like that, I guess. Anyway, to describe myself back when is painful to do because I'm like a whole lot of other people in our community. I was like just about our entire community. We accepted the values of our community, who said homosexuality is a sin, homosexuality is an abomination, and homosexuality is chosen. That's what the big choir preaches. And so as we looked at our son and compared him with what society was using, the words that they were using to describe his trait, his condition, we realized there was a huge gap. We knew this boy, and by the way, our family picture, that's a little old picture down there, but the little boy on the left, lower left, is Eric, our gay son. Now look at him. Does he look gay to you? Delightful child.
We all look gay. We're all in flowers. Did you know that? It was that period of time. You should wear togas in a family picture.
Anyway, so here I am, this homophobe trying to live with a person who is much more enlightened than I, and who is much more accepting of Eric than I. The most embarrassing thing that I ever said to him as he was about to get in the car with his sister and drive to California to go to Otis Parsons School of Art and Design, which is a very fine school, was, Eric, if you associate with those people, I won't be able to support you in your education. I actually said that. I have apologized to him once a year ever since over having said that, because that was a very cruel, unfair thing for a father to do. And yet, you know, about 2 months ago at one of the family fellowship forums in Provo, we met a young man who had just been expelled from his family. He's a return missionary. When he came out to his parents, his father is in a prominent business. He was fired from the business and expelled from his home. This just happened last month. Well, we didn't do that to our son, but it was close. And I was close to that, for which I am eternally regretful. So, here we are. We have this wonderful son, and we have this attitude in our community. Why such a big gap? So this launched us on a course of study and investigation that has literally saved our lives and brought us to a point where we can share information that is valid. But that's the problem. Our problem is ignorance. And the solution is valid information. So, Eric came out and we went in the closet. We were isolated for at least 3 years. We didn't think there was another LDS family that had a gay child. The only persons we talked to were each other and Eric. That was it for about 3 years. So, and this wasn't fun. This wasn't fun at all. But finally, Eric began to see the problem and he said, you have got to go do something about this. And he started sending us books to read. And they were very helpful because they were the stories of people who were going through the same thing we were going through. And he said, there's also a group in Salt Lake that is sponsored by Jerry Johnston, who has a gay son, that you ought to go visit. So we went and visited the People Who Care group. And for the first time, we were able to voice the words, we have a gay son, for the first time after a few years of struggling with the thing. So this was the beginning, and it was an important beginning for us. The same lady referred us to some people who were the authors of a book called Peculiar People. This is an anthology of articles written by people who are gay and people who are associated with gay people. Now, this was helpful. And these people held what they referred to as the Fourth Sunday Study Group. That's quite a term. It consisted of some clinical social workers. We had Mary Beth Rains, Ron Scow, Wayne's brother, was a participant, and several others. At each Sunday, each fourth Sunday, somebody would come and present the findings of research that was being conducted in regard to homosexuality. Well, our eyes started going like this, and we began seeing, my goodness, there is a body of information out there that doesn't seem like our community knows about. And so we studied with these people very gratefully, We met some wonderful people as well who came in to present, including Evelyn Christensen. Her husband, Rex, is a retired dentist, and they spent $100,000 trying to find a cure for their son's homosexuality. They traveled all over this country. They searched, they sought, they tried, they looked at everything because they wanted to get this thing changed and removed. Well, to no avail. So these are some of the people we met with, and as out of this came the first conference on sexuality held at the University of Utah, co-sponsored by the Graduate School of Social Work, in which Dr. June Reinisch, who was director of the Kinsey Institute, came to be our keynote speaker. We had panels, much like we have here at Sunstone, panels of people, some of them are sitting here today, who presented on various questions and topics. What are we as parents doing with regard to our gay child? And so forth and so on. We had a married couple in which the husband was gay talk about the problems that they had in that marriage. And as you know, the church no longer recommends that marriage become a solution to homosexuality. However, they still hope that people can reach the point where they can get married in spite of everything, which is amazing to me. So we held our conference, 1993, University of Utah. It was very interesting because I was walking around scared as heck.
He didn't want his name on the committee.
No. In fact, I made all of the physical arrangements with the university, and I did all this work and was making sure the session started on time, that I didn't want anybody to know who I was. So that's the way that comes. And here in the back of the hall, I look back there, and here's a lady in a trench coat and a hat with dark glasses on.
And a scarf up like this.
The mother of a gay son who was terrified to come and be seen. So by the end of the day, however, the hat was doffed, the glasses came off, and the coat came off, and she came out. So it was wonderful. So we met some of the most wonderful people there we've ever known. Wayne and Sandra Scow. Wayne, raise your hand. One of the most wonderful couples we've ever known. And there are several others of you here who weren't there at that time, but Wayne was there. And so here was the beginning. So following this, Ron Scow came to us, more or less came to Catherine because he knew what I was, and says, we'd like to start a support group for families who have gay children. And we'd like to get this organized and get it going. And I said, Catherine, I don't want you to participate in that. This is something the church ought to do. They send missionaries down to the prison to hold sacrament meetings. But we can't get them to get together and help families with gay children. I wonder which crime is the greatest and in whose eyes. Well, nevertheless, I was opposed to that because I thought that's something the church ought to be doing. I still think so. But nevertheless, a group, Family Fellowship, was begun. Here's a little bit about Family Fellowship, brochures on the edge of the stage. There's quite a story attached to this, and sometime we'd like to tell it to you. But it has begun, and there are over 1,500 names on our mailing list now. We have a quarterly newsletter that goes out, and we meet quarterly in a forum all up and down the Wasatch Front. We meet in Provo at the Utah Valley Medical Center, Regional Medical Center. We meet in Salt Lake. You want to say something,
Kel? Well, September 30th is going to be the next one in Provo.
Right. So we have this group of families who have come together to help other families understand the truth about homosexuality. And I'll just quickly say that there isn't one reputable scientist who studies in this field, this area, who thinks that homosexuality is chosen. Not one. There are a few still claiming to be, but you can't find any results of their research because there is no research. But the real research shows that there is, that the homosexuality is not chosen?
Well, we were launched then on a path of trying to advocate, because we were really offended by injustice. And Rob, even though he sounds like he was just terrible, and he did go through a period of being really terrible, he's always hated bullies, and he's always hated injustice. And as Jimmy Carter said, it's wrong to condone, even by your silence, the persecution of another human being. And, you know, that famous quote, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And so we felt we've got to get out there and do something. And so we have participated in family fellowship and met wonderful people who are closer to us than our own family. And and since family fellowship is not an advocacy group, it's just support and education, we joined with PFLAG, which has an advocacy component to its mission. PFLAG, Parents and Friends and Family of Lesbians and Gays. And this is an organization that reaches about 80,000 families. And we went to our first national conference in San Francisco, and it was amazing to me. You know, I come from this tradition of hand-wringing and, poor old golly, I've got this gay child, you know. And there are no hand-wringing at PFLAG.
It's like state conference.
Yes, all these 1,000 people at the Hyatt Hotel.
People.
And they're all, you know, talking about what can we do to make the world better for our kids, you know. And one scene I'll never forget, in the elevator, we were going down to the really nice dinner that night, and everyone was all dressed up. And here was a mother, just like a Relief Society president, you know, and her husband. And there's their lesbian daughter helping her mother with her necklace to get it on right. And I thought, you know, these are family values. These are people caring for each other. And the last PFLAG conference we went to was in Washington, D.C., the Millennium March, and there we were with Ted and Kay Becker. And there were, again, 1,000 parents there, and most of us marched. Don't you think most of us marched? And we had on our red T-shirts, and we formed down by the Washington Monument. And when we moved out, you know, and started walking, just a roar comes up. It always happens at PFLAG parades, but this was amazing. And everyone was just so warm and appreciative of parents. And Guy Berryessa and his partner, Trey Lathy, had come clear from Heidelberg to march with their mother, Janet. And they had made a sign that said, "We are proud of our straight parents." And that was the most photographed sign that day. I mean, we had to keep stopping for them to be photographed. And after the march, we were kind of exhausted, so we went over to one of the museums to have lunch. And I saw this really handsome young man, and he looked at my shirt and said, "Oh, are you from PFLAG?" And I said, "Yes." And he started to cry. And he said, "I just can't tell you what it means to us to have you here, and I hope next year my mother will be here." And then we saw another lesbian couple, and they said they were from a university, students, and they said, "Thank you so much for what you're doing." And I thought, you know, this is easy for me. I can march in parades and be a surrogate mother to people whose mothers have turned their backs on them. This is something I can do. I can love people and be there for them and try. And I said to them, "We're going to make the world better for you, and that's what we're trying to do." We're just about out of time here, so I'm just going to say one of our recent successes, which has really amazed me, is out of the ashes of that horrible time at East High School, where really the LDS community led the fight against Gay Straight Alliance. And there was one memorable evening when Boyer Jarvis, who is our resident humanitarian in Salt Lake City, he's on the board of everything, the NAACP, the youth, the Civil Liberty, ACLU, I'm getting all my alphabet mixed up, and he read in the paper that PFLAG was forming, and he has no gay children or relatives, but he's there every month. and supporting us and saying if we want to put up a billboard, he'll match any funds that we raise. And this is a retired assistant associate vice president of the University of Utah. I mean, he's not money bags, you know. And he's just a wonderful person. So he called and said, oh, you know, there's trouble at East High. They had the Gay Straight Alliance presented a little short presentation at the Multicultural Assembly. And, you know, the word's gone out through all the stakes on the east side that everyone's supposed to pack this community council meeting Monday afternoon. So you better be there. We've got to go. So there I was. And it was amazing because I saw people that I had been in social groups with a week before. This one woman singing art songs, you know, to this little group. And there she is, her face just contorted with hatred. And it was like the Salem witch trials. I mean, it was frightening, terrifying. And we had just been on a documentary for KUED, and the producer of that came up to me and said, "Have you ever seen anything like this?" And I said, "I never have. I have never been in a place where there was so much visible hatred. It was palpable. I had to leave. I'm a retired school teacher, and our whole focus was we are the parents in place of the children's parents when they're with us. And there were these high school students being absolutely terrorized by these crazy parents, and not one person from the school district stood up and said, this is outrageous. You have no business acting this way in a public building. These children are students in this school. Their parents are taxpayers. They are citizens of this nation, and they should not be treated this way." I was amazed. Well, this group of angry people decided that they would, they were circulating petitions to fire all the gay and lesbian teachers in Salt Lake District and the principal. The principal is already resigning, but they wanted to fire him too and make sure he was really dead. So the whole gay community assembled at, you know, all the leaders, and there are a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot of wonderful leaders in the gay lesbian community. We met at the ACLU and sort of, what are we going to do about this? And we were energized. And everyone had their assignments, and then they said, "Well, all you straight parent, you know, allies," and there were people there from other churches, and they said, "You ought to organize and, you know, be there to support us." So we're like five of us. So we organized. And
I was recovered by the time.
And we became the Coalition for Safe Schools. And in 2 years, you cannot believe all we've done. I mean, we are on a first name basis with the superintendent. She calls up, "Hello, Catherine. This is Darlene Robles. I'm calling back." And I think, wow, you know. And it's amazing what just a few people can do. We have become allied with the National Conference for Community and Justice, which Boyer Jarvis is also on the board of, and we have participated in their any towns where they take students and keep them for a week in a camp and teach them to be respectful. And Hardy's son was just there, and we were there to admit him again. And the hope is this younger generation that isn't filled with such hatred. And that's what we're hoping for. But this last year, we were able to participate when we heard that a girl at East High, a lesbian girl, had been assaulted twice and was afraid to come back to school. And she wasn't going to be able to graduate because this happened right at the end of the school year. And the school's attitude, as always is, it's her fault for being a lesbian. You know, blame the victim. Very little was done, I mean, about it. And so we got in touch with her parents and her mother, and she said, "I didn't even know you people existed." And we said, "We don't want to do anything that you don't want to do, but if you want to do something to get her graduated, we'll be there with you." Well, the principal had just intimidated her, you know. And so we said, "Don't go without us." So we go, you know, five of us. And he tried to intimidate her right in front of us and send her to another school. The boy who had perpetrated it, nothing was happening to him, but she should leave. And she wanted to graduate with her class. at each tie. And so we have a real bulldog on our committee, Mark Briner. He called up Family Fellowship a couple of years ago and said, I'm an 80-year-old grandpa, and I'm mad as hell. So he just bulldogs these things. He goes around and gets her from class to class, and we got her graduated. Well, then, amazingly to everyone, the boy ends up before a judge. Judge Valdez, the wrong man for a hate crime, right? Thank goodness for Judge Valdez. And of course, the attorney comes in for the boy and says, this is such a wonderful boy. He's going to the University of Arizona as a rugby player. He doesn't have time to do anything this summer because he's going to Europe, da-da-da. And the judge said, well, if he's such a wonderful young man, I wonder why he's in my court charged with such a serious crime. And the crime was assault and
strong-armed robbery.
And he actually ended up being shackled and taken out to juvenile detention. And they couldn't keep him the whole month because he had to go to Europe to play rugby. But the judge put him community service hours to be overseen by guess who? The Coalition for Safe Schools.
It's us five guys.
So we are now recognized by the court, if not by East High School principal. But at any rate, it's kind of amazing to have helped one person. And that's all we're trying to do, is just try to change one heart at a time. And Wayne Scow is in and Sandra are in one of the most beautiful videos called Straight from the Heart. And I'm so touched by what you said, Wayne, when you said, I just wish that I had made the path smoother for my son. And that's what we all can do. Thank you.
No, you didn't really talk about the packets. You cut me out.
Oh, the packets.
We just held a quick meeting and said there's one more item on the program here. That happens to be this little item right here. This is called the Stephenson Packet. Everybody, most of you know about it here. But I just want to tell you about it quickly because it is a big part of our effort to overcome homophobia. We were sitting in our home at dinner one night with several of our college friends for over 40 years and having a wonderful time. Catherine had prepared a wonderful dinner, and all of a sudden, we were just kind of saying funny little things around the table, and one good man made a homophobic remark. Wow, this was the night that Matthew Shepard had been killed, and we were in terrible mental condition all day long. Catherine got up from the table and left. I don't know where she could go. She's in her own home, for heaven's sakes. If this happened in somebody else's home, we would have just walked out the front door. Nevertheless, it happened, and we kept our composure, and we got through the evening. Eric called to see how the dinner went, which he often does. He's so kind and sweet and thoughtful to his mother. And he called and says, well, how'd it go, Mom? And she told him what had happened. And he said, well, that man owes you an apology. So he got on the phone. He lives in Inglewood, California. He got on the phone. He found this man's telephone number. And in 10 minutes, the offending party is on the phone trying to apologize to Catherine. This man is a former bishop. This man is a former mission president. This man is a former temple president. This is a wonderful man. I've sung in quartets with this fellow for years. And he's a wonderful person. But he is in the depths of pain because of what he said. So, he said to her, well, you know, I should have known better. I knew that Eric had chosen that lifestyle. Well, that fixed it right there. Catherine says, well, I'm sorry, I can't talk with you. And she hung up the phone. So, and 2 or 3 days later, we got this letter. And the letter started out, my hand shakes as I write this letter. Very apologetic. Humble letter. When I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, I have let this brother down. And so I called him on the phone and I said, you know, I'm responsible for this thing having happened because I did not share with you what we know about homosexuality. would you like me to send you some information to read? He says, oh, I would appreciate it because I really don't know very much. But you see, it's the people who don't know very much who are saying everything. So, I says, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll send you this information, and we will also send it to all of the members of our study group. Well, we ended up sending it to, what was it, 150 people?
Yeah,
we sent it to
relatives.
All of our friends that we could think of, even those we thought might throw it in the wastebasket. We sent it to all our relatives. We sent it to our bishop. And since I'm an instructor in my high priest group, I ended up sending it to every high priest in my high priest group. Later on, I shared it with our state president. I wrote him a letter. And this was just before the KUED documentary, when we knew we were going to be globally out to the world. So I wrote them a letter, and we sent a packet to them. Well, the response is just amazing. We have had one negative response from a rather pompous nephew. And he's a medical student and thinks he knows everything. Says he knew Roger Gorski. But he didn't know that Roger Gorski was one of the speakers at one of our conferences, annual conferences, who obviously knows all about it. In fact, he knows it's not chosen. And yet this boy thinks because he knows Roger Gorski and all this stuff that he can think what he wants, which is typical of people who are like this. Okay, so the packet was born. The packet was sent. And as our daughter said, watch out from our parents. They've gone postal. And that's true.
She also said, I thought it was really interesting being raised by Mormon Democrats. But now that my parents have become Mormon gay rights activists, it's really interesting.
So anyway, that's the story. And it has had a good effect, though it's somewhat like heating the ocean with a glass of hot water. It's a very difficult process. But we continue on in our small way. And I have some packets up front if you want one. We have one of the best brochures I've ever seen from the American Psychological Association, Answers to Your Questions about Sexual Orientation and Homosexuality. I'd like to see our community endorse this. It'd be a good idea. Also, there's a little brochure on the Family Fellowship and a copy of our story, which has essentially been presented here today. Thank you very much for your attention. You want both of these?
One is fine. Well, you've heard the Stephenson story. We kind of drop in closer to the end of that story. But what a wonderful experience it has been. Now, I kind of do what Millie Watts would do were she here, and that is I take care of the tears. So if you'll bear with me, this stuff is too close to my heart, and this, you know, these tear ducts are connected to the heartstrings kind of thing. So I may be able to talk and I may not. I'm the one who's the marriage and family therapist of this group. And so you can guess that I have worked with a number of couples who have struggled with these issues. But I'd like to backtrack a little bit before that. We, as Jay told you, are the parents of four children. Rather than it being our youngest, our gay son is our oldest son. And by the time we had accepted the fact of those little symbolic things throughout his whole life that had been happening and that we had just kind of pushed back, as parents of gay children do, I was already a clinical social worker and my husband was already a psychologist, and so that part happened when he was I think either a junior or a senior in high school. We could no longer deny it because Mark's English teacher at one of the parent-teacher conferences, when Ted was not there, by the way, said to me across the table, you know, there's these long tables and the teachers are sitting every so often and the parents are lined up in chairs waiting to talk to them. That's the way it used to happen. And she says to me, Mrs. Packard, are you aware that your son Mark is gay? And I can imagine I went, And I had gotten in the habit of setting up appointments with the four children. They were of varying ages. Mark was in high school. I think Mike was still probably either his last year in junior high school and moving on to high school, and the other two were spaced out about every 2 years. And so to make sure while I was in graduate school I didn't lose touch with them, I'd make appointments with them. Needless to say, I went home and made another appointment with Mark, and we had a long talk. Interestingly enough, when one of those early talks I'd had with Mark and with each of them was saying, you know, we need to be accepting of all people no matter what their differences are, and I'd included homosexuality in that. I'm guessing that Mark at the time thought, oh, Mother, don't you know? Can't you see? But he didn't say anything at that point. So I've kind of backtracked a little bit. And we handled that part just fine. We were supportive parents. We had been educated. However, the part I didn't handle as well was when Mark told me he was HIV positive. I couldn't sleep all night long. I crashed. I was at the time working at the university's counseling center. Sorry, this is part of the story and the tears are coming. It's amazing. I don't know how many years it will be before I can tell this without crying. Thanks, Rob. I'm not sure that'll stop the tears.
Just open it up. It's big.
Oh, really? If I go like this,
yeah, just open
stop?
It up. Yeah.
Okay, it scares the tears.
That's Catherine's size. Got ink marks okay. on it and everything.
If it'll stop the tears, I'll do whatever is necessary. Anyway, at that point, we knew we needed something more. And it was at that point that Ted said, well, what about family fellowship? Now, I had a wonderful colleague who had told me a few years before when the 1993 conference occurred. And I was already booked solid with clients, so I hadn't gone to that conference, but so I would have known about family fellowship earlier. Well, we go to our first family fellowship meeting, and not only do we meet these wonderful people, the Stephensons and the Watts, but one of the couples I meet is this wonderful Berryessa couple. Max Berryessa had been my advisor when I got my undergraduate degree. I mean, this was amazing. I mean, these were normal human beings that I already respected and admired, and they had gay children. Well, that group became my anchor. However, when I went to the first community council meeting with Kit and Rob, just to tell you how little ready I was to be an advocate, I sat beside them for quite a while, and then during most of the meeting, and then afterwards, somehow we got separated, and I was in one corner, and they were in another corner after the council meeting, and a reporter got me in the corner.
The East High School Community Council.
No, this was the city council.
Oh,
that was
city
the city council.
Uh-huh. Oh, did we take them on?
We were there in numbers. Anyway, the reporter got me in the corner, right. And I said, Rob and Kit, help. And I said, this reporter wants me to make a statement and give them my name. I'm willing to give a statement, but I'm not ready to give my name. Is that okay? And they said, sure, you do what you want. I think they both got on each shoulder to support me. Well, times have changed, and I have learned. And I am grateful, as they have been bringing me along. So, Rob, even though you might have been more of a homophobe, I think I was even more scared than you were.
That's what it is. Fear,
that's
right.
Fear. That's fear. And that is what causes that, I think. When we are uncertain or fearful of the unknown. And what I would like to say at this point is that I agree with what was said at a recent National Religious Leaders Roundtable. The quote that came to us from an email is that one of the most important things for our gay children to experience is the same kind of thing I would say to any set of parents their children need. And that is, number one, acceptance. Number two, support. Number three, unconditional love and understanding. I think that is so true. Every one of us need that. And it's the most recent couple that I had a chance to work with, where the young man was the gay male. They'd only been married for 4 years. He had known going into the marriage that he was bisexual, and that is a term that he used. The two of them agreed to work on this. The bishop said, no problem, we encourage you to get married. And the heartbreak that this causes is just terrifying. The depression that it causes is just horrifying. And the danger of both partners, both the wife who's very straight and the husband who ends up finally saying that he is gay, is just devastating. I do hope that someday our leaders will even covertly avoid even the implication that that might be a way for those people to go. It's too heartbreaking. So I'm going to turn the time over to Ted and express great gratitude for those in the room who have influenced my life so that I can make my small contribution.
I will try to talk very fast, so there's 5 minutes left for questions and discussion. I must start with a confession. When all this started in our family life and for the next number of years, I thought I was really pretty sophisticated and accepting of Mark, and certainly not homophobic. But I want to confess, especially to Rob and to all else in attendance, that I too am a recovering homophobe. It's just that I had a little more self-deception, and my rationale basically was, quote, it's none of their damn business, end quote. And that sort of, that sustained, I was quite comfortable with that for a number of years until we got involved with good people like the Stephensons. Rob and Kit are exemplars. They're role models, and they're people to be emulated. They speak out. They insist on being heard. They often do it with sweetness and gentility, but they also can be very direct. They're consistent, and they're dedicated in the ways they do this. They're also reasonable, and they're respectful in their interactions with people. And they're educated and they're knowledgeable about the issues and also about themselves. And I want to come back to that in just a minute. The result of this is that they make a difference in our community. And it's a significant difference. And I think you got some sense about that from just the anecdotes that they were sharing briefly with us, because there's lots of other things they've done in addition to that. They were not born this way. They learned the skills, and I'm sorry.
Absolutely true.
Now, they certainly had good potentiality, but they had to learn some things. They had to learn knowledge. They had to acquire skills. And above and beyond anything else, they had to get to the point where they were able and willing to deal with their own emotions. And those emotions essentially boil down to two or three. One is fear. We're very afraid, I think. I was certainly afraid with my fancy rationale about it's none of their damn business. To be open to people about my situation and about my son's situation and about the absolute outrage in terms of his treatment by many people and many elements of our society. But fear is a big part of it. Guilt and shame are also a big part of it, and I think one of them, I think you talked about that a bit, the whole sense of guilt, and this sort of pervasive sense of shame at being a parent of somebody who happens to be different than the norm in the community in some ways that traditionally have been viewed as being just plain terrible. This pervasive fear and shame is based on centuries of misconception, and resulting prejudice, and for which there is absolutely no factual evidence. I mean, that's one of the great ironies of the whole topic that we're trying to deal with in our time this morning, is we're talking about misconceptions that are tied into these very strong negative feelings that people experience, and there's little, if any, factual evidence that supports these misconceptions. Now, you think for a moment, what would happen if just 20% of the parents and loved ones of gay individuals in our community were open about the situation, and if they stood up in the way the Stephensons have stood up, what sort of an impact would that have? Well, I don't think we'd be having meetings like this very long. Now, we probably would have meetings, but we'd be celebrating things more than decrying the kind of conditions and so forth. And this sort of pervasive silence that has characterized the gay community in general for millennia, and particularly parents and loved ones and associates of gay and lesbian people, is this a very, very difficult and thorny kind of problem that we must do something about. Now, I think there are at least three necessary strategies for fighting homophobia effectively. And let me state them really briefly, and then we can maybe have a few minutes just to talk. One is education. People must first educate themselves and then help to educate others. And there's really two parts to this. One is the obvious part, which is the knowledge about the issues associated with homosexuality. And there's a lot of information, there's a lot of evidence, and there's much more out there than I think that 90% of the populace have hardly any awareness at all about. But the other part about it, the other part of the self-education that I think is exceedingly important, is education about the impact of fear and guilt and shame on each of us, and how it inhibits action, how it creates all sorts of fancy rationales for, you know, like it's none of their damn business, so I'm not going to say anything about it, and that sort of thing. So education is one. The second is research, relevant research. I mean, we simply have to know more about the situation and the issue that we're talking about. Now, there's a lot of stuff has happened just in the last decade or so that there's much more interest in this topic on the part of people in not only the behavioral sciences, but also in the life sciences. And all of the kinds of exciting things that are happening now, in general, in terms of life sciences, homosexuality is a part of that and will be an increasing part of that. And I think that's really the foundation of education is research that helps to define what the situation is and what the facts are and what's acceptable and what's there simply is no basis for. And the third component is speaking out. People, we simply must be brave, be courageous, deal with our fears, deal with our sense of shame, and stand up and speak out for our loved ones and for other people in our society. And lacking that, then we simply will continue on as has gone on now for a long time. Now, there are many, many changes now, I think, compared to how things were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. But relevant research, education, standing up and speaking out are all necessary and effective strategies for fighting homophobia and striving for justice and appropriate treatment for all of us, including certainly our loved ones. Thank you.
Do we have some questions that you'd like us to address, please?
Bishop came to him, not my uncle, but his partner, and said, some inspiration by calling you the vision bridge. So it never happened today in these handbooks and central control. And he said, well, you know, my situation. He said, I'm not interested in your situation. I'm interested in what you can do for the Lord, the Lord's kingdom. And fascinatingly enough, that was a marvelous time in that war's history in terms of activity and the skills and the talents that he brought to that position. Case number two, this happened to me about 3 years ago. Bishop came to me, I was stuck in a horrible position as a chorister.
I was a chorister. I don't think that's a horrible position.
They cut out your practice time and you're kind of irrelevant. Would you just get up and wave your arms, please, and don't practice? But anyway, the whole point of this is that he said to me, so-and-so, who heretofore was our best organist, we can no longer use him. The state president has informed me that his brother was. I said, I thought something was strange with that organ, even though it was no one played it pretty well. I said, what am I to do? I said, you expect me to use these people you have who are barely able to perform. I said, I'm not going to be there. And this, I think, is a strategic moment to bring this up, because just before we did our annual Messiah performance, which required lots of talent and nerve and everything else. What am I to do? I said, you need to be there, and I promise you, Bishop, he will not fornicate for that organ. more importantly, I said, you should learn a lesson. I said, to the glory of God, his talents have made it possible for a lot of people to experience what I call a definitive spiritual moment, if that's possible. Third point, my wife is a Episcopalian, and she was informed me, and I've learned this, and I mentioned it here too. The Episcopal Church knows how to punish these people. They put them in such positions as senior and junior wardens and on committees where they're worked for them.
Thank you. I didn't catch a question in that, but does anybody have a question? Delightful comment. Well, it's going slow, let's put it that way. Please. Yeah, you bet. Switch it on.
Having been married to a gay man, I didn't really realize it when we were married because he was really in the closet. He came out last year, but he's been married. He's been actually with his partner for 5 years. But his parents are really having a hard time, and as someone who I care very much for his parents because they were my in-laws for several years, as an ex-daughter-in-law, what would be a good way to help them? I mean, other besides this family fellowship, but I don't want him to know that it's from me, because
you want me to send it?
I guess. Because it's really hard for me, because I feel like, you know, I've come to terms with it, but they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And so
this is typical.
Very typical.
Very typical.
They were Dallas Temple Mission presidents.
Uh-huh.
I mean, missionaries for a long time, and it's just like then like his dad did finally meet his partner, but it was just really like this. So
right.
So just I don't know. It's just really hard for me.
Well, I'll tell you one thing we've learned about this, and that is that our opinion matters little to anyone, particularly in face of the position that is taken. But when you hand somebody some documentation on the subject that is highly valid and to the point, for example, in this little brochure it says, is sexual orientation a choice? No. Then it gives a few sentences. So, we like to give these because it's not our opinion. Our story is in here, but this is not our opinion. These are the opinions and the results of research done by experts. Another question, please. By the way, this man was our son Eric's first bishop in the, was it the first singles ward in L.A., and he's the author of one of the articles in our packet, No More Strangers or Foreigners.
You can tell,
Bob Reese.
You can tell parents by their children. I was privileged to be the bishop of three of Rob and Catherine's children. The reason why this is important, I mean, there are lots of reasons why it's important, but the reason why it's especially important is that there are so many people out there who have no one to contact. I got a letter about a month ago from a young missionary in Mexico. He said, I heard about you. And he said, I'm scared to death. I don't know what to do. And I'm gay. I knew I was gay before I was called on a mission. My father was a bishop. I came on my mission. It's been more difficult than I ever thought possible. I can't talk to my mission president about it. I'm scared to death that my companion will know about it. I heard about Stuart Mattis, and I've been thinking of taking my life. He said it's been complicated by the fact that I recently started teaching the gospel to a homosexual Mexican, and I don't know what to do. I don't know whether to tell him, get away from here, or to try and somehow teach him. I made six phone calls, and with my very poor Spanish, finally reached this young man and talked to him, and talked to him about what he could do and sent him a lot of information. But as I hung up the phone, I thought, how many thousands of young men and young women are there out there who have no one, who don't know about this, who don't know that there are people who can help them understand? And the reason why this is important is that every time someone understands what this is about and has the courage to do something about it, it saves somebody's life, their spiritual life and their real life. So whatever we have to do to, in our whatever way we can, I respect Rob and Catherine so much because of the dignity with which they do what they do and their persuasive ability. There are many different strategies, but whatever we do, we have to keep in mind that there are those thousands of young people out there who don't have anyone, and we are the ones that have to make a difference in their lives.
Thank you, Bob.
I hate to break this up, but we do have to go. I do want to make a couple of comments real quick. One, you may want to pick up the Pillar, which is the local community gay publication here in town. It has some heart-wrenching stories about kids who have been kicked out of their home and are currently homeless because of this. I recommend it. Bring your handkerchief. Also, I want to thank Family Fellowship, because when I was first coming out as a gay man, I had to deal with my own homophobia, which is an interesting process. And it was through Family Fellowship that I was able to be introduced to the gay community and realize that, oh, gee, they're like everybody else. But anyway, and I appreciate that. But I'd like to thank everybody for coming. And I'd like to thank the Stephensons and the Packards for their comments.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Good to hear you. I've been there. Yes.